Welcome back to The Wine Show. You're with Jill Upton, and next up we have Bill Calabria from Calabria Wines. Calabria Wines originated in the Riverina, which is an agricultural region of southwestern New South Wales. They're also now in Barossa, and it's an absolutely fascinating story of how Bill has originated and then grown Calabria Wines into Calabria Family Wines. So we welcome you, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No, it's a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, Bill, can you tell us a little bit about, before we jump into all of your successes, can you give us a bit of a background about how you started the Calabria Wines and how you've got it to where it is today?
Good question, because it happened more by accident. My father and mother come out from Italy and in the late 20s, and they... like all Europeans, like to drink a little bit of wine. And that's how come my father started to make a bit of homemade wine for himself. And then his friends found out he made it. And this is how, you know, the business grew by accident. And when I was 13, I wasn't doing too good at school. So my father told me, wasting your time going to school, and he put me in the vineyard. And from the vineyard, when I was 16, I ended up in the winery. And that's how I got into the... I don't know if you understand how Italians operate. They don't ask you what you want to do in your life. They tell you what you've got to do.
Right.
And that's what happened there. And it all started from then. And I found out that I was allergic to alcohol while I was trying to make wine. So I've never drank any whiskey, wine, beer or anything, but I do taste and I spit out. And I've been blessed to have a very good palate.
Well, I wasn't expecting that one, Bill. My goodness, that's really interesting. It's like a diabetic working in a candy store.
Yeah, you better believe it.
So based on that, that newfound knowledge, it's even more awe-inspiring that you've that the successes that you've made, both for your winery and for yourself and your family. I mean, you are a highly celebrated winemaker. So what do you think, how do you think that all came about?
It came about because we had very little, and I was the youngest of nine children, and my parents always struggled, and because just trying to, you know, keep the family afloat and working hard for what they had to do. And I think what gave me strength was to try and improve and help my parents out. So I was very dedicated, and I put in some long hours to do what I had to do. And we had a winemaker, but he was a consultant winemaker. And he was making wine and teaching me certain things. And then it got to the point where I wanted to be able to make the wine and do everything myself. And my parents said, well, if you want to do that, you've got to go and get someone to teach you what to do. And I rang up the Charles Sturt in Wagga to find out if I could get enlisted. And they said, oh, yeah, if you got your high school certificate and if you got, hang on, I haven't got a high school certificate. And I said, oh, well, we can't enroll you. And then I said, but I've got a winery and, you know, what am I going to do? He said, oh, if you've got a winery, you can be exempt. We've got a two-day course coming up and we can enlist you in that. And you wouldn't believe who the lecturers were when I went there. It was Brian Crozer and Andrew Hood. And they were the two lecturers. So you need some luck in life, I think. And that was the luck I had, that I got these two geniuses who knew that I had a great palate. They knew that I was a hard worker, but they knew I didn't know anything about the technical side of winemaking. And Andrew Hood done a deal with me. He said, if I come to your winery on weekends to make wine during vintage, I will teach you how to get all these technical sides, and I want to learn how to make wine in a big winery. And that's how we made the partnership. And I have to say, without those two guys, I wouldn't be where I am today, because they put me so far ahead of anyone. In no disrespect to everyone in the region here, but I think I was 15 to 20 years ahead of everyone else. and they gave me belief. I seen what they made with ordinary grapes and turned it into gold medal winning wines, and that gave me the belief that it can be done.
Wow, there we go. It's a bit of a, it's not what you know, but who you know. That's, wow. I mean, they are two names, very, very famous names. And I agree, like I know Brian Croser quite well, and he's pretty special. What, as you say, what he can do with the grape is quite extraordinary. So you had the right people behind you, and they obviously had had their faith in you. And all of a sudden now you're producing these wines that are just completely cleaning up. We had the recent Riverina Wine Show Awards, and you are, of course, you were accepted in as the new Riverina legend. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. It's quite humble for that there. It was because, you know, there's a lot of people who deserve what they've done for the Riverina and done for the wine industry. Mm. But I have to say that, you know, to have my name up alongside the two McWilliams, Keith and Tim McWilliam, you know, yes. it's pretty special. But you can only do that if you've got a good team behind you, Jill. I'm blessed that I've had a supportive family, and I've had loyal staff. And you know yourself, you don't do it all on your own.
No, of course not. Of course not. I do know, understand your both your son and daughter work with you. I've been in touch with them. They're obviously very, very supportive family, and what you're growing together is fabulous. Would you? So you actually just touched on McWilliams. So you actually bought McWilliams.
Yes, we did. McWilliams was struggling, and the administrators went in and they put it out for tender. And you know, I think we got it more by accident than by from what we were doing, because the people who were interested in kept falling off, and it's very hard to deal with the administrators. And I think people lost patience with them, and I think I was the last one standing.
Wow. We've just had a message just come through, Bill, and it's from Christopher, and he said that he would love to hear about the Calabria family wines, the iconic Shiraz. Can you tell us a bit about the iconic Shiraz?
I can tell you what's happened to iconic Shiraz. When we bought the vineyard in the Barossa Valley, that's probably about 15 years ago, everyone said that I was crazy for buying the vineyard, but the reason I bought the vineyard was because there was old vines there which were planted in 1914, but they were really, really bad. But I went ahead and I bought the vineyard, and I spent all my time ripping out all the dead wood and reviving these vines. And I had belief in these vines because I tasted some of the fruit that was on there. There wasn't much on there, but the flavours they had were just incredible. And that's what made me want to resurrect this vineyard, and also to understand the hard work the pioneers done before, you know, I got there. So it felt like I had to do something. And this is where we made our iconic wine from. And I think the first vintage was 2013 or 2014. And the current vintage at the moment is 2016. And the iconic Shiraz was awarded the best of the show in the decanter in London. And the following year, the 2018, which is not released at the moment, it also won best of show in the decanter. So, you know, that's quite, pretty special, especially knowing that it's such a tough competition. Yes. And it's a big, full-bodied wine. It's got beautiful flavours. And it's a wine that once you taste, you want to keep going back and tasting it. Where I like to taste it, and even though I don't drink, but I just like to go back and try and work out why does it taste so good. And yes. I think even the everyday drinker who tries it are just blown away by it. So there must be something special there in the grapes. So we can all make wine. It's a matter of how good can you make it. And I think you've got to put your twist on some things to what you believe in would be best for the wine.
Yep, for sure. So, Christopher, I think that you should definitely go and get some. I will certainly be doing the same thing. But Shiraz is probably not your flagship so much. I mean, the Riverina area is very well known for its Giraffe. And yes. Jerusha is actually it's a varietal that we don't speak about that often on the show. So I'd like to touch on that. Your Three Bridges Jerif, the 2019 vintage, won the Best Riverina Jerif recently. And once again, your Jerifs have been cleaning up at the show and the awards. So for the people out there who don't know a Jerif so well, can you talk us through that particular varietal?
Yeah, Jerif's not such a very old variety. A guy by the name in France, by the name of Dr. Jerif, he was a nursery man, and he blended and cloned these two varieties together. He cloned Shiraz and Pleurus together, and he came up with Jerif. One had spicy flavors, and the other one had huge color, a purple tinge color. And this is where it was made mainly for port. And not many people were using it for dry reds, except in that Rubber Glen area. They were very famous for their Jerifs, but they were wines that need to be cellared for at least 5 to 6 years before you could consume them, which is not like the trend that people have today. A lot of people like to buy a wine and drink it within 12 months. I thought you were going to say something.
Sorry, so, I just lost you for a moment then.
Yep. So what happened is that we made a Jerif that could be consumed quite early, but also that could cellar well for later on. And the big secret to Jerif is that it's got such big tannins that the grapes need to be really ripe. You don't pick them on sugar content, you pick them on flavour. And by picking them on flavour is the secret, because you need those tannins to be soft. Otherwise, you have to cellar the wines for 5 to 10 years. Right. So that was probably the main focus I was focusing on, to have a wine that could be consumed now and also able to mature as it goes along. And the ideal thing was that the climate in Griffith is very, very good. It's consistent season from season to season. And Jerif is a late ripening grape and it's got thin skin. So it needs to have perfect weather. And as you go into the season, longer the weather changes. So you've got to make some decisions quite quickly before the grapes can end up with infections or they end up being deteriorated that you can't do anything with. So it's a fine balance. And that's how we come up with this Jerif, because we wanted to be able to do something that is ideal for the climate we have in Griffith and the Riverina. And that seems to be one that's done exceptionally well.
So could I ask, what would you say the main differences between if I was to have a Jerif that was only, 12 months old or 10 months old, but then in comparison to if I put it down for 7 years, what are the main changes in the wine that my palate's going to be loving?
What happens to the wine? Because the Jerif is a 14 to 14.5% alcohol, because we do pick it later, yeah, it helps the wine mature better, that it ends up being a lot smoother. The flavours don't change that much, but the palate changes where the wine is softer, more velvety as you keep it longer. But there's quite a few people who have put the Jerif aside, because we made our first Jerif 1999. And the amount of people who ring me who did discover it and they bought it, they're ringing me up telling me they're trying it and it's so, so good. And we've done a vertical taste and you can see it seems to get better as the years go by. Mm-hmm. And I put that down that the tannins become softer, the alcohol in it helps it mellow down, and I think that's the main reason.
So Jerifs are, I think, if I'm correct, it can also be called the Petite Sirah. Is that right?
Yeah, like, it is.
A lot of people probably do know the Petite Sirah, even though it's not extremely common either, but it actually is. Would you say it is the same grape?
It is. What's happened, the USA always call their wine Petite Sirah. And I think it was only probably 5-6 years ago, DNA were done on it, and it is exactly the same. It is a Jerif. And right, the government there and the authorities have let them continue with Petite Sirah and also Jerif, if you wish. But in Australia, we've always called it Jerif, because that was its right name. But the DNA states that it's exactly the same clone.
Okay, well, that's actually, I think that's very good to know. So you've got a lot of the GRIPs, but you've also, you've really expanded because you've taken on, you've bought so many other wineries, and that's how you're really building up the brand. And you now have even the Champagne House Dutz, yes?
France, yes, we bought it. We're the distributor for it.
Right. Okay. And so, because I wouldn't mind just touching on this a little bit, because I find this fascinating that you've grown it from, you know, actually not even being a wine taster yourself, from absolutely nothing into now owning things like McWilliams and other Italian brands like Canti and Lebrandi. And these are names that, you know, that basically everybody knows. So how did you start getting into that? And what was involved in bringing up from, I mean, I think it even says that, you know, in the last 10 months, you've gone from 140 SKUs to, like, you know, just under 300.
Yeah. I can't take the credit for wanting to import wines and sell other wines. I have to give that to Andrew, my marketing, and Elizabeth, my marketing and graphic designer. They are the ones who come up with this idea. I wasn't for it at the start because I thought we got to concentrate on what we're doing. But they've realized that you need a portfolio when you're selling your wine. And because we've got so many brands, we need to have other offerings as well. And I have to say, they were 100% right. And that's why it's good to have young people thinking for you sometimes, Jill. And you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, I'd still like to think of myself as one of those young people, but yeah, I'll pass that.
You are the young person that I was referring to.
So can I ask you this one? What is it that you're going to be? Well, you're not going to be drinking, but what will be that your son and daughter, your family will be drinking on Christmas Day this year?
They've got so many options. I know they like the St. Patrie, which is from South Australia as well, and it comes from our 1969 vineyards. And that's a wine that's also done very well, but that seems to be their favourite because it's not a big full-bodied wine like the Shiraz. It's a bit in between where it's got beautiful fruit characters. It's a GSM, Grenache, Shiraz and Mataro blend.
It is
a nice wine in its own merit, and I think you find that a lot more people are starting to head towards more lighter style wine still. It's like a trend.
Absolutely.
That's what I think they'll be drinking.
Yep, no, that sounds good. Actually, I did have a beautiful GSM last night at Beppi's restaurant, an Italian restaurant in Sydney. It's quite a famous restaurant, and I had a lovely Henschke Henry 7 at GSM, and it was glorious. You know, whilst I was drinking, I was thinking, this just works so well with Christmas fare. You know, yes. The Grenache just brings out, like, the cranberries and all that sort of thing. It's like, oh, I'm definitely going to be getting some more because it is very, very good wine. Bill, we are now just running out of time. Thank you so much for your time today. Fascinating story, and seriously, I just congratulate you on what you've been able to achieve from absolutely nothing and not even tasting the wines really along the way. So you have yourself a fabulous Christmas. We're going to go into an ad break and hopefully another little Christmas carol, maybe, Dennis. So, Bill, nice. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners. Thank you very much for taking the time as well.
Thank you.